Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of the Turner's Take Newsletter. I am a broker at Daniels Trading. Work with hedgers and speculators. We have online trading. We have broker assistant. A mix of both is hybrid and a very popular category. And soon, we'll hopefully be adding some cash and OTC products to the mix also. If you ever have any questions about what it's like to work with me, feel free to give me a call, 312-706-7610. For clients out here there that hear some of these strategies on the spec side or the hedge side, and you know, like them, shoot me an email, give me a call, and we can go over them anytime. If you like this podcast and you found us through like iTunes or on the web, you can always check out the Turner's Take newsletter. All you got to do is pull out your cell phone and text the number 33777 with the message Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R, my last name. Hit send. We'll ask you a couple of questions and you can check out the newsletter too. All right, so let's get into it. First week of May. Let's talk macro markets first. I think the big exciting news is there are states and nations around the world, states around the country, nations around the world that are reopening up. That is very interesting. I think we're going to start to see a rebound in things. I think the lows for the stock market are probably in. I do think that that unemployment report, that I want to say it comes out May 8th. I'll have to double check on that. But, is it Friday? It might be Friday. Anyways, it comes out, I think it's May 8th. It's for April unemployment, and it's going to be ugly. I mean, I've heard ranges as low as 15%, as high as 25%. I think it's near impossible to get it exactly right on the number. And you got to give the analysts and the economists some leeway here to be, to have a wide range of expectations, but it's going to be high. And it's not even going to catch the full scope of things. I'm sure everyone has stories and knows what's going on in their local economy, but it's not great, especially business owners. Do a lot of cash business, heavy on the retail side, are not doing well. And especially ones that are relatively started up, you know, in the past couple of years is definitely difficult. So, they probably just go away. And it takes a long time for that section of the business economy to rebuild. And then on the bigger company side, you know, they're cutting CapEx, which is capital expenditures, pretty significantly. And it's, and that's not great for growth in the short to midterm. So, but what it does do is, I think when we do get breaks in the stock market, you could probably buy them. And so from a trading standpoint, like the E-mini S&P or maybe the mini Dow, or if you don't want to mess around with those contracts, because, you know, let's face it, they can be pretty big. I mean, E-mini S&P trading at, if it gets up to 3,000 here, that's $150,000 worth of the stock market, so the micros would be a tenth of that, you know. But anyways, I kind of like the idea of buying the breaks. From a macro standpoint, it looks like things are starting to turn around. I don't think we're going back to where we were anytime soon, but I do think that we're going to start seeing on the crude side, which we'll get to energy a little bit later, but on the macro side and the business side, it looks like buy the dips might be an interesting way to trade this as a day trader or a swing trader. And I kind of like that. I do like that. And I'll be looking to do more of that. If you're interested in doing that with me, give me a call. I can either text you or give you a ring or shoot you guys a quick email when we're looking to do that. but let me know, and I'm certainly add you to it for clients here of mine at Daniel's Trading. So that's my ideas on the stock market. I think what we're also going to see here is a rebound in energy. I know I wrote this a couple of days ago, but one of the real interesting stories here is the U.S. rig count for crude oil production is down 50%. I want to say we were like in the low 700s, and now we're in the mid to high 300s on the rig count. You can look that up. That's public knowledge. You can probably find it on some like Yahoo Finance webpage on the rig count. And I mean, that's drastic to cut it by 50%, but it makes sense. We're using 50% less energy, I believe, when it comes to, or we have 50% less crude oil demand and through refined products. And a lot of it has to do with the travel and driving and transportation, I mean, a ton of it. And also the lower manufacturing and the businesses that are open. So I believe it. We're using half the energy than we had been, and yet really had a huge effect on the energy markets. And so we've cut back way big on the demand side. And also OPEC is cutting back. They're going to have their cuts go in. The cuts they've been talking about, they said they're going to do in May and June. I believe them. And I think what's going to happen here is, while we're not going back up to $60 in crude anytime soon, I do think two things will happen. One, keep an eye on the expiration month for crude as we head into the last week or two before expiration. And what we want to see is we want to see storage not be an issue, where either A, people are getting storage because it's been made available, or B, we're starting to use as much as we produce and storage isn't as big as a deal. And once you see that trend, the next month or two should actually be draws on stocks. When I say stocks, I mean supply. And as far as we see that, then the front months start to be well into the 20s, maybe even to low 30s. The back months can be into the mid to high 30s. So December, which I like the December contract. I think there's a lot of value in there. It's been in the high 20s, low 30s. We start to see that trend. One, the front month not going to complete crap in the last week because of storage issues is step number one we need to see. Right, and then I think at that point the back months stay in the 30s, and the front months stay in the 20s, and we finally see that draw on crude oil stocks, which I think can happen in the next 2 months. Then we can finally see like a real recovery. Plus, you also think like the states in May that are opening up, the United States and the countries around the world that are opening up, that'll help. And then in June, I'm hoping the state that I'm in, Illinois, is pretty much opened up along with a lot of the Midwest, which will probably be ahead of us because Illinois is a complicated state. You got Chicago and the big suburban areas, and then you get farther outside the suburbs, and you're definitely in the rural areas, and they, you know, you can't, it's not a one, the state is definitely not a one-size-fit-all kind of state. So hopefully they can, we can get a comprehensive plan where, you know, southern Illinois doesn't have to exactly match up with what's going on in Chicagoland. So let's see. So anyways, that's what's going on. I think that's how these things, that's how energy kind of rebounds here. So what I've been doing is buying December. I like buying December on the dips. And then with energy traders who kind of want to have a core position and trade around it, you know, we'll put on whatever, multiple contracts, take half off on the big rallies, wait for the dips, put that other second part on, but always keep that core on. So like let's say December the other day, traded down to like 28, 29, put your position on, you rally up to 31, you take half off, you wait for the next big down day, you put it back on, you wait for the next big up day, you take half off again, and kind of do that. I think over time what's going to happen here is we do eventually get up to the 40s, for the December contract. And if we're not in, you know, up in the 40s by, you know, November, we'll just roll to March or June or something like that. You know, something where we're going to always be 3 or 4 months out and just keep on playing it that way. But I like it. That's how I want to play crude oil. I also like the heating oil and the RBOB contracts. I think I like the heating oil. I like buying the December heating oil, I think is an interesting way to play heating oil. And then as we get to October, November, maybe roll the DEES heating oil into the summer 21 gasoline contracts to play the distillers. But that's my thoughts on the energy market. I think that's how we'll play it. Not for everyone. A little bit of a big boys game, but you know, it's hard not to be in the energy market with if you can't take the leverage of some of these contracts. So unless you use the spreads like Dece versus June or Dece versus March or Dece versus Dece, then you can. Then you could do it a lot more effectively on the margin and leverage side. If you know, if you're not dealing with you know, a sizable account. Okay, so on the grain side, actually, I'm going to do grains last. Livestock. The other thing that I like. So I said I like buying the dips in S&P. I like buying the dips in the energy market, in the deferreds, not the front months, in the deferreds, and cattle. And again, I don't love being in the front months of cattle. There's too much of a gray area. I mean, what is going on right now is, you know, the packers, slaughterhouses, they're shut down, all right? And for good reason. I mean, they got hit with the virus, and they got to do what they have to do and keep everyone safe, and protocols have to be followed, and I get it. And the president came in and opened them up because we got to keep the food chain going. I get it. That's the situation, right? On the retail side, the product side, the cash, you know, end product, the cutouts, they're expensive, all right? And it's because we're not processing it. And I feel for the guys who are producing the animals because, you know, what are they going to do with them? They can't sell them to the slaughterhouses, and they're up a creek too. So this will all get sorted out. But in terms of the futures market, I think being in the front month is very difficult. I mean, you got two ends of the spectrum that are hard up, you know, for either A, to sell their product, or B, to buy it. And then in the middle, you know, they have fantastic margins, but they can't even get the animals in. And it just, it kind of makes the futures and the cash market kind of a mess. What I like is the far out contracts. And then I ask myself, okay, let's say I like December. What do I like better, Dece hogs or Dece cattle? And the thing is, what is in more demand and what has a better supply and demand profile in the winter? And it's cattle. Reason being, the better supply and demand profile for hogs is the summer. It's when it's the highest demand. But we're not going to have the summer barbecues. You know, we're not going out to the ball games and getting hot dogs. You know, I'm not going to be going to Memphis in May, which some years I do, some years I don't. But when I get down there, I love going to Barbecue Fest. Those things are not going to happen this year. So, but in the winter, we can see more of a demand here. So if I'm going to want to, if the whole timing of this virus was 6 months ago when I thought we were going to come back in the summer, then yeah, I'd be buying July hogs, but we're not. Looks like we're going to start really rebounding in the fall and winter months. So I like Dece cattle. And anytime we fall below 100, I like it. Same kind of strategy with crude. I don't mind buying multiple lots on the way down below 100. And then taking half off as we rally above. And if we get the pullback again, we'll put that, you know, a little extra position on. And if not, we keep on going. That's fine. We have our core position. And I like it. I think cattle could be 110, 120 by the end of the year. So I like that a lot. And has everything to do with recovery and just supply and demand. So it's the seasonality of the demand. Also, weights for cattle get lower because it gets colder. They're not going to have a protein or a feed problem because Lord knows we're going to have enough protein feed in this country. But we will see the demand come back. So that's my idea on the cattle market. As far as the grains go. All right, so I was bullish corn at first notice day, and we traded like anywhere between, let's say, 310 and 314, and we were getting long July corn. And here we are, what are we, like 318, 317? And I was really hoping we'd get a much better rally in the corn market. I got to tell you, you know, for this time of year and the seasonality and the pressure the market puts on first notice day, and then crude was up so much in the past couple of days, like the front month doubled, and you know, crude today was up 20% in the front months and 10% in the back months. And what did corn do? It went up 2 cents, which to me says corn's a dog. And no matter how bullish we can kind of create the outside markets and the momentum in the macros to get corn going, it's just not going anywhere. So I'm getting out of corn in the front months. If you have the options, like buying July calls and selling these calls, I think you can just, for a credit, I think you just let that go. But if you're in call, you know, if you're in the actual July or you buy a July call, you're probably up a little bit, not a ton, but I would just take it off. I would just get flat and look for a way to get short into the WASDE. I am going to put out, which is what we really want to do anyways. Like, the big trade we want to have on is being short the new crop as we head into the WASDE, which is next week. The little trade that I was kind of hoping would be bigger, you know, just from first notice day until the first into the second week of May would have been long corn. Yeah, we got a, I don't know, we got a nickel out of it, whatever. Not a big deal. What I want to do is I want to look to sell corn. I wouldn't even mind being short corn against long soybeans. I like the wheat protein play of Kansas City versus Chicago, and I wouldn't even mind selling some calls on new crop to collect some premium that way. So let me break it down why we think that way. I'll post my tables, and then in my newsletter, I'll write a little bit about it. And then for specific trade recs, clients contact me. Those that do and say that you're interested in the stuff, I do send an email to my clients saying with the specifics. So if you get this and you want to see it, let me know, and I'll get it to you. But so here's the deal. If you look at this table that I'm going to post, I'll put it in the show notes and Turner's Take newsletter. Corn acres are probably not going to be 97 million acres. It's probably 95 or 96, but it's probably not going to be below 95. And let's just say it's 96 with a 178 carryout and harvested acres are 88 million. That's going to be a production of not quite 16 billion bushels of corn, but it's going to be like 15.7 or 15.8, something around there. All right. I think I went too far. Let me back up. Old crop. Here's the thing with the old crop. The ending stocks are going to go higher. And here's why. The USDA needs to bring down ethanol again. I think it's clear that we're just not going to produce ethanol for the rest of the marketing year, which ends the last day in August. Next year's marketing year for new crop starts September 1. I can't see crude oil rebounding enough where we're going to really have an impound in an increase in ethanol. I shouldn't say we don't use any corn for ethanol. It's like at 50% production right now. For the ethanol plants that are running, that are still doing it, producing the ethanol, using corn for ethanol. So the ethanol use this year on the supply and demand table is probably going to be about 4.5 billion. So that's got to come down. I think exports just come down slightly. But when I plug and chug these numbers, I've got ending stocks at like 2.5 or 2.6 billion, which is not good, right? Because I think, you know, on the WASDE last month, we were just over 2 billion. And, you know, the market's reflecting that corn's this low. July's in, you know, 310, 320 because of that. And then what happens in the May 12th WASDE is we see new crop for the first time. That's why the May WASDE is such a big WASDE report. It's, if you're ever wondering, hey, when did they start to show the new crop numbers? It's May. And it can be a big report because of that. And when they add in those 95 or 96 million acres and the trend line yield, and then the bigger carry-in, because the ending stocks are going to go higher. You know, I've been saying we can have a carry-out north of 3.5 billion. But privately, something that I don't talk about, I don't, you know, when I'm on the radio or talking to journalists or, you know, I don't give the high range because I just don't want to be the guy, you know, that is way out there. But, you know, I mean, if it was north of 3.5 billion on new crop, I wouldn't be shocked. I've heard some crazy numbers. I understand how they get there. All I know is it's not good. Like 3.5 billion or higher is not good. I mean, just so you know, like 2.6 or 2.7 billion is the 20% stocks to usage mark. I mean, that's bearish. That's really bearish. And anything above that just gets ridiculously more bearish. So, you know, if we're in this 3.5 billion or higher ending stocks for December corn and stock to usage is like 25% or higher, you know, December corn should be below $3 at harvest. I mean, significant. I mean, not like 3.95, not 2.95, like 2.70 or 2.75 in that area. And now we went over, you know, what's the potential low for corn. It's probably 220 plus whatever the national basis is. And if we get a national basis that is, the similar to the tariff, like what we had in the tariffs with China, which was around 50 under, 40 or 50 under, I want to say. So you would think then these futures are like 260, 270, 280, like around there. Because we usually don't trade lower than the loan value plus the national basis. That is usually the hard low for any commodity. I don't care if it's soybeans, wheat, corn. The loan value plus the net average national basis really gets you to the real low. Because if you dip below that, guys start, you know, can loan out corn pretty much risk-free. And they never have to sell. So there's no more selling pressure. There's no more point to selling corn at those levels. So that's our view on corn. So how are we going to play that? Well, one, the July, get out, you know, take the small profit we have, get out of July. Number two, I like selling December on the rallies. I mean, I'm talking to you here at 10 o'clock at night. I try to get this podcast and newsletter done today, but my wife also works. She's a real estate agent. She had some stuff to do, and then I had the kids, and then you know how it goes. Like, then forget about it. You can't do anything again until like 9:30 when everyone starts going to bed. So here I am. But I think what's going to happen here with corn, December corn 340, we could be 380. I mean, we could be 280 by harvest. So there's still like 60 cents on the table. Am I telling you to sell your cash grain? No. You'd probably turn off this podcast right now. But there is revenue to be made on the table by selling the futures markets. That's the best way to think about it. If we do get up to 340, I'll take a look at selling 365 calls for like 15 cents, try to collect 15 cents. I'd have an interest in that. You could probably even sell the 360s and buy the 320s for even money, or maybe even collect a little bit to pay for fees. You know, where you're, you know, and if we do go to 280, you know, that's a 40 cent, 40 cents of potential downside protection. I mean, I can see doing things like that if we get a rally here between here and the WASD. So if you're interested in that stuff, let me know. If you're a client here and if you, for some reason, you don't get my emails that I send to my client list when we do those kind of trades, get in touch with me. I'll make sure you're on there. I do also like not only selling these corn, but I wrote about this too, selling these against soybeans. When I look at the soybean table, and you'll see this when I post it. You should see it now, actually. I mean, when I post it. When I put this podcast up, the tables are going to be up along with it. I'm thinking ending stocks get closer to 500, because I do think for the old crop, this is the old crop, exports are going to come down a little bit. You know, we're just not seeing a lot of some Chinese demand, but not enough. So let's say ending stocks around 500 million for the old crop when the WASD comes out. But new crop at like 85 million acres, 84 harvested, trend line yield. You know, I have a crush at right around, you know, record at 2.15 billion. I have my exports at 2 billion, which I think can go higher. But I don't think the USDA is going to get too aggressive on the exports. I think 2 billion is fair. And then if China really comes in and fulfills its commitments, it could be more from the phase one. But that puts ending stocks at 450 with room to run higher, or with room for the stocks to run lower. That's not tight. That's adequate. That's a stocks usage of 10%. So what's interesting about soybeans, I don't see a ton of downside in soybeans. We're in November around 840. I mean, maybe. I mean, if we have a great growing season and ending stocks go to 600 and, you know, China doesn't buy a lot. And the crush is the crush. The crush is so inelastic. It really is. What we're going to crush, we're going to crush. It's going to be like 2.1 or 2.15 billion. The exports are the things that can be either rationed, or if there's a huge world supply that can go down. But I think, you know, with phase one, hopefully, you know, and it being next year's marketing year, I do think there's a really good chance for exports to increase. So I do think that number is going to be strong. So with that said, I do like being long soybeans and short corn on that spread. I think that I think that has some potential. I think soybeans have a chance to rally this year. I mean, maybe back up to $9. And then I think corn, unfortunately, has the potential to run down to sub-3. Now, while that, you know, if soybeans really rally like that, it'll kind of support the corn market. And if the corn's really tanking, I think soybeans is a slow follower down. But I do think that difference between the two. And, you know, I've had this question a lot over the years about trading soybeans versus corn. Some people, and it's usually from guys that do it 1-to-1. And I always do soybeans versus corn 1-to-2. One, the margin's the same. And two, you know, if you think about it, it's all about that when you're spreading contracts like that, you know, the total contract size value really matters. And what I mean by that is when you sell soybeans, and I'm going to use make the math easy on me. Let's say soybeans are $8. All right, they're not. They're $8.40. Let's just say they're $8. So $8 times 5,000 bushels is 40,000, basically. $40,000. Okay, so that soybean contract, I know the margin's like 2,000 or something like that, or 1,500, but the total value of that contract of soybeans, if you were going to buy it outright and take delivery or something like that, is $40,000 worth of soybeans, right? $8 times 5,000 bushels. Now, corn, just to make the math easy on me, let's say is $3. So $3 times 5,000 bushels is 15,000, right? So if you're long just 1-to-1 soybeans to corn, think about it this way. I'm long $40,000 worth of soybeans, and I'm short $15,000 worth of corn. So the trade just becomes a soybean trade. Because if, let's say, soybeans go up 5% and corn goes up 5%, well, 5% on $40,000 is worth a whole lot more than 45% on, you know, $15,000 of corn. But if the market should come down 5% in soybeans and corn, well, then it's a, you know, I'm going to be down because the soybeans, even though the same percentage move happened, I just have a lot more of the soybeans. So if I really want to try to play the difference between the two commodities, you try to even out the contract value as best you can. So if I buy one soybean and sell two corn, then I'm long about $40,000 worth of beans, short $30,000 worth of corn. It is a little bit, you know, it's weighted towards soybeans, but it's not crazy. Like, you know, it's close enough. It's close enough if you go a 1-by-2 on that. And the margin on corn versus soybeans is something like 1-to-1 is like $1,850, but 1-to-2 is like $1,900. I mean, it's like a $50 increase in margin to add on a second corn. So I like it better. I actually think I personally think the 1-by-2 is actually a less volatile trade, even though you're adding on a contract of corn. So that's what I am thinking. I was going to try to get long soybeans outright. But the whole China and U.S. thing that happened over the weekend, you know, with where did the virus come from? Was it in a, you know, was it in a lab? Was it not? You know, the president coming out and talking about tariffs again, you know, in phase one. I'm like, geez, Louise. So I don't want to just be long soybeans. If I'm going to get long soybeans, I want to get long soybeans against corn, or I want to bull spread it, like buy Nov, sell Nov 21 or something like that. I really don't want any business just being long the flat price contract right now. So that's my idea on that. With wheat too, I was writing about wheat. Sounds like to me we're going to have a good wheat crop. It sounds like the Black Sea is going to be fine also. And what's going to happen over probably the next 6 to 12 months? So I think Kansas City wheat, hard red winter wheat, is going to catch up to Chicago, and we're going to finally see the Minneapolis and Kansas City contracts, the spring wheat and the hard red winter wheat, trade over the soft red winter wheat, which is the Chicago contract. And the reason being is we're going to have a good enough Chicago wheat crop where they can take the better quality wheat and there'll be enough of it, and they can blend it with really just the not-so-great stuff that we have now, the lower quality. There'll be more deliverable grade, wheat out there, and there won't be such a high premium for deliverable grade wheat, which is one of the issues with why the Chicago wheat's higher than everything else. The lower acres, you know, how, and no one wants to plant wheat. And the thing is with Chicago wheat, you know, where Chicago wheat, that soft red winter wheat, is traditionally planted, is in corn and soybean country in the Midwest. I mean, that's the thing. You know, you get farther out west, you get more hard red winter wheat, but you also get a lot, the ground is different, and it might not always be make sense to use it for every last acre out there for corn and soybeans. But if you're in Illinois and Iowa and Ohio and Indiana, you know, where, you know, those places used to grow, I mean, a long time ago, used to grow a lot of wheat out there, but they just don't anymore. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, you know, economically. And what's happened is all those acres have come out. Now, with wheat at $5 and corn at $3 and soybeans at $8, I think we see more soft red winter wheat acres. And we're going to have such a good crop this year, we're probably going to bring down the protein differentials. So what's going to end up happening is over probably this crop year and next harvest, you're going to see more of an equilibrium, and we'll go back to the old protein trade. And what that used to mean is Chicago was the cheapest, and then Kansas City would usually trade like 30 or 60 over Chicago, and then the spring wheat would be another 60 higher. And the reason being is the protein. And the lowest protein value is the Chicago wheat. That is they used for feed and a lot of like the highly processed foods like your Hostess cakes that you find in the supermarket, stuff like that. And then the next step up, the higher quality wheat is the harder winter wheat, and finally get to the real primo stuff like that bread flour that, you know, that you go to a French bakery, like what's the best flour you can find. And that, a lot of that is from the spring wheat. So we'll probably see more of that. We're going to see more of that. So I was writing about, I like Kansas City over Chicago. We're like 30 or 40 cents under. Kansas City is under Chicago. I think we can eventually, in this crop year coming up, to get to zero. And then probably next crop year, go back to the old premiums on the way they used to be a couple years ago. So I do like those two. That is how I see the markets. If you want to trade with me, let me know. If you're a client and you want to trade these ideas or you just want to see the emails when they come out, when I have the very specific trade ideas, let me know. I mean, in Turner's Take, I give my ideas. I give the reasoning and the idea behind the trade. But if you want the real trade specifics of when I'm getting in and getting out, if you're a client, let me know. I'll add you on my client list. Or if you're interested in being a client, whether you're on the hedge side or the spec side, let me know, and I'll make sure you get those too. All right, so that's it. It's 10:15 here. I am going to wrap it up, but everyone stay safe. If you like this podcast and you want to send it along to friends, please do. If you like the podcast and want to rate it on iTunes, I always appreciate that. That's how a lot of people find us. I mean, this podcast is not just informational, but we do use it for marketing. It's a way for people to get to know Daniel's Trading and myself and Turner's Take. So if you like it, please send along or please rate it. And if you get the podcast and you want to get the newsletter, just take out your phone. It's five numbers. You just got to send a text to number 33777-33777. The message is Turner. That's my last name. Follow the instructions. You can try out the newsletter. And if you want to work with me or want to know what it's like working with me or have a question about the grain markets or livestock or energy, give me a call, 312-706-7610. That is the podcast for this week. Everyone stay safe, and I'll be talking to you early next week. Not too short, so before or after WASDE, probably after. All right, have a good one, everyone.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.